Thank you all for coming back for the afternoon session. This second part of the seminar is going to be, now we're going to get into more of the skills aspect of the seminar, because unlike the other seminars I've done in the past, this one has a strong skills component to it, where we actually try to learn how to pronounce and recite the verses well. So we'll, having done some of the groundwork, we'll turn now to the actual language itself. And so at this point, so we're going to need the document pretty soon now on the screen. Okay, so the best place to begin with any language is, of course, the alphabet. And so I want to say a few words about the Sanskrit alphabet. I think because many of us here are familiar with the Sanskrit alphabet, which is more or less the same alphabet as today contemporary North Indian languages, so we won't need to go through it in as much detail. But I do want to say a few things about it first. So if we can turn to 1 second here. See. Okay, this page, but we need to turn it, and specifically this, and yeah, that. So the left table, right table. So when I say left table, please expand this. So the Sanskrit alphabet has a great virtue over the English alphabet, in that there's exactly one sound per letter. And what this means is that if you know how to pronounce the sounds of the Sanskrit alphabet, you will be able to pronounce anything in Sanskrit. It's just a combination of those sounds, however many there are, about 46 or so. English also has many sounds, but the only reason we have only 26 letters in our alphabet is because each letter does double or triple duty with more than one sound. So the letter A, for example, does and ah and a and ah, and so many different sounds are coalesced, which makes it necessary to learn spelling classes, for example, in English. We teach spelling because there's no correlation between pronunciation and writing. But in Sanskrit, because there's an exact one-to-one correlation, therefore there's no such thing as Sanskrit spelling classes. The only thing you need to learn is how to pronounce well, clearly, and if you know how to pronounce it, you will know how to write it, and you will know how to read verses and all of that. So Sanskrit pronunciation, though it can look daunting, it's still manageable because there's a finite number of letters that you need to know. Okay, first of all, the sounds of the alphabet are highly and very, very well organized. This is something that we take for granted if we know the language at all. But if you look historically in the West, in the past, it's been in the past two centuries or so that people have discovered that the sounds that we make as human beings can be mapped to different parts of the mouth and organized based on the quality of the sound. This is something that it took linguists very recently to discover this in the West. And already back more than 2,000 years ago, the great sage Panini, who is the most famous grammarian of Sanskrit, had classified this system. And when the German and British Indologists discovered this in the 1800s, they were blown away. They were shocked because it classified things and understood features of the language that are that were yet to be discovered in Europe, and the ways of analyzing the language. Even today, when they teach languages, they often use terms from the Sanskrit to describe certain grammatical features, because that's where everyone first learned it in the West, is from the Sanskrit itself. So this order is very, very special. And Jiva Goswami, he wrote a grammar called the Harinamamrita Vyakarana. You see, Panini is the greatest of the Sanskrit grammarians. He's one of the original sages. It is said that at the beginning of creation, Lord Shiva did his Tandava dance, and he played his damaru. And the sounds of that dance, his dance steps, and the sounds of his little drum were heard by different sages, and each heard them in different ways. So the great sage Bharata Muni heard those sounds and created the Natya Shastra, which is the original document, scripture that describes dance and music and drama. Another one of the sages was Panini, and he heard that sound, and he heard the letters of the Sanskrit alphabet. Gakha, gagha, like that. Nga, cha cha cha, like that. And he came up with the whole science of language as he heard it. So these sets of sounds are considered divine. They in themselves have a lot of spiritual power, and they're deeply connected with our theology. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he mentions the Sanskrit alphabet, and he says, of all the different letters, I am aksharanam akarosmi. I am the letter A or the letter A. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada, he explains one line of the alphabet, because our acharyas do, as pavarga. Each one of the lines of the alphabet are named after the first letter. And one of the lines is pa, pa, ba, bha, ma. Right? And this is called pavarga. A very ancient word, pavarga, means this material creation, this material life. And it comes from each letter of the alphabet meaning something else, right? Pa refers to parishrama, the hard work that we do in this material world. Pa means the pena, or the foam that comes to the mouth when we work that hard. We see this happening sometimes, especially amongst animals. Pa, pa, then ba refers to the bandhana, or the bondage that work creates, because now you're stuck in a rat race and you can't get out. And then refers to bhaya. Once we're all tied in and enmeshed, then we develop fear that we're going to lose what we worked so hard to get. And that fear eventually leads us to ma, which is mrityu, right, or death. So pa, pa, ba, bha, ma, that line of the Sanskrit alphabet is the story of our life in this material world. And the liberation, therefore, is called apavarga, right? And apavarga refers to freedom from this material world, or freedom from that line of the Sanskrit alphabet. This is found in the verse in Bhagavatam. Krishna Krishna Mahabaho Bhaktanam Abhayankara Twameko Sarvam Dayimam Apavargosi Samsrite, right? Apavargosi Samsrite. Arjun praying. Arjun praying to Krishna when the Brahmastra is coming at him. Then he says, oh, my dear Lord, you are the most powerful. You're the only one able to extinguish the fire that burns all of us in this world, because you are apavarga, right? You are the one who goes beyond the pavarga, that letter. So it's a very powerful, it's a very beautiful alphabet. And this is the story of Lord Shiva's dance and how it comes from. Jiva Goswami, however, disagrees. He says, no, Narayana dudbhutoyam varnakramaha. He says this order of letters comes from Lord Narayana, not from Lord Shiva. Okay, so he's a faithful Vaishnava. And so he says, originally Lord Narayana, and he has evidence for this. It's not just a sectarian thing. The Upanishads say that the sound of the Vedas, and therefore the sound of the alphabet, is the breath of the Supreme Lord, and it comes from his breathing. Okay, so let's take a look at the scientific organization of the letters of the alphabet and the difficulties that we encounter occasionally in their pronunciation. So if we can expand the left side table a little bit, please. Yeah, there we go. So these are the swaras, or the vowel sounds, and they're beautifully organized because they come in pairs. And the first 10 are especially come in pairs of long and short. Okay, a, I, e, u, ri, ri, u, and then the 10th one is missing in this chart because it's theoretical only. It's l, long l, and it doesn't actually ever occur in the language. It's just a theoretical letter meant to fill out, make things balanced. That's why the book has left it out. But there's a tenth one, L with a dot, and then L with a dot and a line on top, all. So what makes something a vowel as opposed to a consonant? Anyone know this simple difference between a consonant and a vowel? What makes something a vowel? Yeah. It's independent. It can be sounded on its own. Now here's the fun part. Bonini, 2,000 years ago, he wrote his grammar, and for every aspect of the language, each grammatical feature, he gave little names to that aspect of the language. So the past tense or the present tense or the future, he gave little words like lut and lung and lin. These were meaningless words, but just in words he had invented to refer to specific things in the grammar. So his sutras sound rather funny because they're combinations of these little made-up words that he uses. His grammar's super systematic. There's no reason to demean it at all. It's actually the greatest accomplishment of grammar in the history of the world. It's really, really amazing. And again, this is not just us speaking as devotees or even as Indians or whatever, but really scholars around the world recognize this as something incredible. It's as amazing as the invention of the wheel, practically speaking, at that point in history for someone to analyze grammar like this. But it is rather funny because it's got these little words which are rather meaningless little combinations. And Jiva Goswami, he says, well, why should we do all this effort to learn these sutras with all these little meaningless words? Better, I'm going to give these grammatical features the names of, give them names of Krishna, right? I'm going to name them after Krishna and give them specific names like that, right? So each aspect of the grammar, he gives a particular name of Krishna. And so all his sutras are strings of Krishna's names, essentially. So that one who memorizes, because you see, for the traditional way of learning Sanskrit is the child has to go into the forest and for 12 years has to memorize the sutras of Panini. So 12 years you're reciting something again and again, right? 12 years, if you recite Krishna's name, by the end, you learn the grammar and you become a pure devotee, right, at the same time. And Prabhupada actually says this. He says, if we follow the full morning program and chant 16 good rounds for 12 years, everything we say will be perfect, right? So it's this is it, right? 12 years, we can learn Sanskrit and learn the grammar. So anyway, the point being is that Jiva Goswami, he calls these 10 he calls the vowels in general, he calls them Sarveshwara. Why? Because they rule everything. They are completely independent. A vowel can be pronounced on its own. No problem. A consonant, on the other hand, needs a vowel to be pronounced. Okay? If you try to pronounce the first consonant of the Sanskrit alphabet, that's the ka, right? But you need the Otherwise, if you don't say the you can't say it, right? It doesn't come out because it's a consonant, not a vowel. Therefore, the vowels are Sarveshwara, the Lord of everything, and the consonants are Vishnu Jana. That means they are devotees of Lord Vishnu, right? So they are always dependent on Lord Vishnu for their existence, just as the consonants are always dependent on the vowels for their pronunciation. So the first 10 are very nice because they go as a pair. And these last two, they are both vowels and consonants. So you find this R as a consonant as well. This is why sometimes in the books you find R with a dot underneath it, as in Krishna, and sometimes you find an R without a dot, like Rama. Because in the case of Rama, the sound is functioning as a consonant, R with an A after it, Rama. But in Krishna, you can actually say an R without any other consonant. Rrr, you can do it, right? Same thing with L. You can do it. Therefore, they're counted as both vowels and as consonants at the same time. The first 10, Jiva Goswami calls Dashavatara. So they're Krishna, but his 10 main incarnations, okay? And And the short ones, a, i, u, ri, and u, he calls, which form of Krishna is short? Vamana. And the long ones, a, i, u, ri, o, are called? Trivikrama. When the short becomes big, he's the same person, right? But the short becomes big. So in the same with these vowels, long and short, this Vamana becomes Trivikrama. Then the last four are in a different category altogether. They're what are called, they're all four are long. There's no short. A, I, O, and O. Okay? Knowing the difference between short and long is crucial because it, as we'll see when we go to recite verses, one of the simplest and most effective things we can do to make our pronunciation better of words and verses is to pay attention to the difference between short and long sounds. And when you get a long sound, exaggerate the difference. The long sound is supposed to be two times as long, two matras, two times as long as the short ones. And so many problems happen in our rhythm and in our pronunciation of verses when we ignore the difference or we reduce the distinction between short and long. So we want to exaggerate it very nicely. A-a-i-i-u-u-ri-ri, like that, okay? You want to repeat after me. These are spiritual sound vibrations. And you'll get a feeling of being back in school in India, okay? Okay, let's go for it. A, a, I, I, u, u, ri, ri, u, u, e, I, o, au. Okay, so, that is a very sweet sound that it comes from every classroom in India. This is the thing to remember here is that this I sound, sometimes Hindi speakers will pronounce it A or A, like Chaitanya, but in Sanskrit there's no A sound. It's not Chaitanya. It's Chaitanya. It has to be an I sound. There's two letters, A and I. The reason it's written like that is because it's an I sound, okay? Chaitanya, not Chaitanya. And same thing with this AU. It's not Gauranga, it's Gauranga. It's O. The sound is O in Sanskrit. Hindi has its own quirks about it. Bengali has many, many quirks that go with Bengali pronunciation. We'll talk a few of those a little bit later because you'll recognize some of those quirks that we have in our own pronunciation. But for now, let's focus on the Sanskrit pronunciation in particular. Okay? So those are the vowels. They're pretty straightforward. Now if we can head to the right side table where we have the consonants, please. There we go, and just a little down. Okay, so these are the consonants. Very famous. Ga, kha, ga, gha, nya, nga, cha, cha, ja, jha, nya, da, tha, da, dha, na, like that. So this is where the scientific organization really becomes stunning. Okay, first of all, the rows. Each row is organized based on where in the mouth the sound is pronounced. So the first one are kanthyas. Those are gutturals. Kantha means neck. They're pronounced as far back as your tongue can possibly go. Ka, ka, ga, ga. Notice where your tongue is when you say ga, right? It's touching way back in your throat. Ga, okay? Ga. This is why it's the gutturals. The second one, talavyas, are the palatals, and this is right above your tongue, okay, the roof of your mouth, where you're rubbing gently. Cha, cha, ja, ja, nya, okay? The next ones are murdhanyas. Murdhanyas don't exist in English, so they're often a challenge. They are retroflex. In English, they call them retroflex. Retro means back, and flex means to hit, okay? So that's exactly what you have to do with your tongue. You pull it back, and you hit the roof of your mouth. Ta, ta, da, da, na. Okay? Your tongue is pushing up to, also called cerebrals. Murdhan means head. So your tongue is pushing up to your head. Okay? The next ones are also T sounds, but they're dentals. They're closer up. They're the front of the teeth, behind the teeth, just behind. T, th, d, dh, na. Okay? Now, the difference between these two T's is crucial for good pronunciation. In English, we have one set of T's that is somewhere between the Murdhanyas and the Dantyas, between the retroflex and the dentals. When we say the English T, like in teeth, T, notice where your tongue is when you say T. Right? It's a little bit back in the mouth, but not all the way back. T, right? The Sanskrit dentals are right against the teeth, T. And the retroflex is further back than the English T, T. So the first row is further back than the English T, the second row is further forward than the English T, and the English T is somewhere in between. Okay? So this is why when Hindi or Indian speakers of English then speak English, they have to choose which T. If you have an Indian accent in English, you have to choose which T are you going to use, the back one or the front one. Okay? So when you're trying to say the word tooth, right? So choosing the dantyas, these ones, sounds weird. You say tooth, it doesn't work, right? So they choose the one in the back, tooth, right? My teeth, right? The reason you get my teeth is because you're going too far back for the English T. So I tell my American students in the college that one of the benefits of learning Sanskrit is you can imitate Indian accents very well. So you, the ta, like in the word ate, to eat, right? I ate the cake, right? So that ta is this one here. Is too far back for the English, but you got to choose if these are your only two options, right? On the converse, if you're trying to pronounce good Sanskrit, then this is going to be the litmus test. Frankly speaking, if you hear someone pronouncing Sanskrit and you're looking to see if it's authentic, this is what people listen to. Is the difference between ta and ta. If you can do it, then your pronunciation is authentic. Okay? So ta and ta, that difference between ta and ta is worth practicing. If you already know how to do it, fine. But if you don't, then all you have to do is put the tongue in the right place in the mouth and you can do it. A lot of English speakers cannot hear the difference between ta and ta, because the ears are not trained to hear it. But you can do it before you can hear it. Because all you have to do is put the tongue in the middle of the mouth, turn it, and hit ta, and you can get the sound, even if you can't hear the difference. Okay, this is a very crucial point, that in language, the actual recognition of it comes after you can actually mechanically learn how to do it before you actually hear the difference. This is true of the practice of bhakti as well, right? We can learn how to do the path of bhakti even before we feel it on the inside. We can do the puja, we can do the japa, and so on. And gradually, as we start doing it mechanically, we actually start to feel it on the inside too. As you mechanically pronounce it well, you will start to hear the difference between those sounds and your ears will become sharper. Okay? But the mechanical comes first, then the feeling comes a little bit later in the pronunciation. This is true of many languages. In Croatian, for example, they have two different kinds of ch. And I had a Croatian friend in college and a roommate. He was a devotee, and I said, you know, tell me the two types of ch. And he said, okay, listen carefully, ch and ch. And I said, this is exactly the same thing. He said, you say it, ch and ch. He said, no, you got to do ch and ch. Ch and ch, you got it. What did I do? I don't know. But ch, I couldn't hear the difference at all, right? But when he taught me where to put the tongue, I could do it, even though I couldn't hear it, okay? So that's the key thing. If you can't hear it, it's okay. Then the last one is pa, is the oshtya. These are with the lips. They're pretty easy. Pa, pa, ba, ba, and ma. The pa varga that we've already talked about. Okay, so these are the rows, okay? But that's not the end of it. The columns are also very scientifically organized. The rows are according to the place in the mouth. The columns are according to the quality of the sound. See those little V's and A's at the top? So there's two things that the alphabet does different permutations or combinations of. Voice and aspiration. The A, or aspiration, is a little easier to explain. That's a H sound that you can add to a letter. So the difference between G and K, or between G and G, one has air, the other has less. Okay, G, K, you can feel it. You can feel the air come out. Okay, but that's only one thing. The other thing is the voice. And the voice is the difference between G and G. It's an extra vibration of the vocal cords. Say the sound K. K. Hold your throat. K. K. Now say G. G. Exactly the same place, but can you feel the extra vibration when you say G? Your vocal cords have more vibration then, okay? That difference in quality is called voice. And so the first column has no voice and no aspiration, minus V, minus A, G. The second one has no voice, but it does have aspiration, plus A, K. The third one, voice and aspiration, G. The fourth one, third one is voice, no aspiration, G. And the fourth one has voice and aspiration, G. Okay? That fourth column does not exist in English. We don't have voiced plus aspirated sounds at all. And so those tend to be the greatest challenge. G, J, D, B, right? It's multiple sounds put together from an English perspective, and so you have to all say it at once, okay? Like that. Another thing is this first column, ka cha ta ta pa, does not exist in English at the beginning of words. So it's also a little bit of a challenge. Just like if you say the word pot, with an American accent, pot, can you hear the ha? Pot, pot, right? Pot. You feel it? Even though it's spelled P-O-T, what we're actually saying is P-H-O-T. Pot. But the T has no H. Pot. No H, right? Now flip it. Say top. All of a sudden the H is with T, and now the P is without an H. Top. Right? We don't have the unaspirated sounds at the beginning of words in English. So this first column and this fourth column tend to be the most difficult in terms of sounds. This means that every sound is organized according to its place in the mouth, voice, and aspiration on this grid. It's the most scientific form of organizing sounds that the world has ever known. It's really, really impressive. And linguists today use this organizational system to classify the sounds of other languages, despite the fact that the alphabets are in multiple different directions. So compare this with what we have in the English alphabet, right? A, B, C, D, E, F, G. There's no rhyme or reason to the order of those sounds, and therefore we have to sing a song to help our kids memorize it. But here there's no song involved because every sound progresses very logically to the next. G, k, g, g, ng. That last column are the nasals, okay? And Bernini has, I think, his best sutra, my favorite sutra, is his list of the nasals. He says the nasals are nyamangananam. Can you say that? Nyamangananam. It's all the nasal sounds, and each one is pronounced in a different place in the mouth. Nga, nya, na, na, ma. From the back forward. Notice also that this is moving systematically from the back of the throat, further forward, further forward, further forward, all the way to the outside with the lips. Okay? Like this. Okay, so any questions about the organization of the alphabet? Just not general questions, just specifically about this. Is it fairly clear? Within the what? First? Oh, okay. So the question is the nasals. The difference between this one and this one, right? So this one in BBT books is written with a dot under. Actually, I should have mentioned that earlier. Just so you know, this is... No, sorry, the dot on top. It's done instead of a line on top, this is the dot on top in BBT books, which is an acceptable alternative. So this one is in the back of the throat. In the back. And the next one is on the palate. Nya. Now, here's why you don't actually have to worry about the difference between that. Is because these sounds will only show up with a letter of its own kind in its own row, so you will be forced to pronounce it correctly. Here's an example. Song. The English word song. Song. When you say that N, where is your tongue? It's in the back of your throat, preparing for the G sound, right? That's where this sound is pronounced. This is that na, song. So when you read it in Sanskrit, like the word anga, right? Anga, it's going to be this N. But you don't have to learn how to pronounce it because you will always pronounce it correctly. Sanskrit will only put sounds that go together, together. It won't put this sound, sonaga, sonaga. It won't do that, right? Only this one, songa. Okay, so just to make things complete, let's do the alphabet once together, and then we can move on to some newer stuff. Okay, so please repeat after me. Ga, ka, ga, ga, nga. Okay. Cha, cha, ja, ja, nya, ta, ta, da, dha, na, ta, ta, da, dha, na, ta, pa, ba, bha, ma. Okay. This is not the complete alphabet. There's still some letters missing. Ya, ra, la, va, sha, sha, sa, ha. But this is the grid. That's the most impressive part of that alphabet. Okay, so that's the alphabet. The practice of these letters is very helpful, and I'm not going to go around and practice this more because I think most people in this audience know how to pronounce these specific sounds. But if you don't know, then I encourage you to practice these sounds first. And if you go online, then you can find recordings of the Sanskrit alphabet with clear sound and just practice the pronunciation of those specific sounds, because they are, of course, the building blocks to everything we do with the verses. Okay, but at this point, I want to move on to the verses themselves, because that's going to be the crux of what we do today in this seminar. Basically, how do you define a verse? Okay, what is a verse? What is anything in verse? Well, verses... Not always, but typically they have a meter to them, a metrical pattern. This is a word we saw earlier this morning. Oops, my pen died. Meter refers to a pattern of long and short syllables that create a certain rhythm. So I gave you the example of Hamlet earlier, and a very popular meter from that time was iambic pentameter. And that's to be or not to be, that is the question. Okay, that last word, question, doesn't quite work. You have one syllable left, and question has two. So it's kind of stuck there. So it's a little short. But otherwise, it's to be or not to be, that is the question. Okay? And it creates a certain rhythm. We as human beings are hardwired to feel rhythm. We can feel it. Even if you think you don't have any sense of rhythm, it just means you're not able to express that rhythm yourself. But you can still feel it. This is why pretty much any human being will start tapping to a good beat. Right? It's just a very natural thing. Because we're hardwired to feel rhythm. And that is why even when you don't know how to recite a verse, its rhythm, you will still feel it in you. Because on the inside, your body, your mind can pick it up, that rhythm. Now, Sanskrit has a whole collection of different meters and different verses that create very beautiful rhythms. And the Sanskrit poets have given each one of these metrical patterns a certain name based on their based on the mood that they create, based on the mood. So, for example, one metrical pattern that we find quite a bit and use is called Shardula Vikriditam. Okay, and this means the play of a tiger. Shardula Vikriditam, the play of a tiger. And this is the rhythm, this is the meter, rather, that is used in such songs as Shad Goswami Ashtika. Okay, Krishnot Kirtana Gana Nartana Paro Premamritam Bho Nidhi Dhira Dhira Jana Priyo Priya Karo Nirmatsaro Pujito. It's a very rhythmic metrical pattern. It's got a steady beat. You can dance to it. Dun, 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 dun. Right? It's got a very steady beat to it. And it sounds very playful. Huh? Very playful. But someone with a very heavy step is playing like a tiger. Hmm? Boom, 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 boom. It's not a very airy meter. It's a very solid one, the way that you would imagine a tiger would play. Okay? So this is Shardula Vikriditam, and many verses are written. The first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is in this meter. Janmadhyasya yatonvaya detaratas charteshvabhignya swara. Right? Like that. And many others. Another very popular one is called Vasanta Tilaka, and that's the, it means the ornament. Tilaka means ornament or decoration, ornament of spring, Vasanta. So the ornament of spring, and this is a much lighter, more airy meter. It's got very subtle in its quality. And the most famous verses are the Brahma Samhita verses. Chintamani prakara sadma sukalpa vriksha laksha vriteshu surabhira bhipalayantam lakshmi sahasra shata sambrama sevyamanam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. So notice, it's not got the thump, thump, thump of the previous one, right? It's much more spring-like. It's like something fresh is blossoming and changing and new life is coming. So it's a very beautiful verse for that sort of purpose. And Bhagavatam uses this meter occasionally, actually quite a bit, at different times for different purposes. One of my favorite meters is called Mandakranta. And Mandakranta, Manda means slow, and Kranta means moving. It's slow moving. Like a river that kind of lazily wanders and moves around, and then occasionally goes down some rapids, a little bit fast, and then ambles down again. Mandakranta. And here's an example of a verse that you may know in this meter. Naham vipro nacha narapati napi vaishyo na shudro. Naham vipro nacha narapati napi vaishyo na shudro. Naham varni nacha grihapatir na vanastho yatirva. Kintu prodyan nikhila paramananda purnamritabdhe. Kintu prodyan nikhila paramananda purnamritabdhe. Gopi bhartu padakamalayor dasa dasa anudasa. So you hear the river? You see the river, it ambles along slowly, slowly, and then every occasionally it goes fast over a set of rapids and then ambles along again, right? Very beautiful. And what gives us its beauty is that the first four syllables are very long. Naham vipro gopi bhartu kintu prodyan, right? Those four syllables, nice long. And then it's followed by some several short ones. Kintu prodyan nikhila parama, right? Fast, 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 fast. Slow again. Parama nanda purnamritabdhe. So it has its own flow to it that gives it its own flavor. You will find throughout the scriptures that the meter changes when the mood changes. If you think of Bhagavad Gita, most of those verses are the standard short verses. They're called anushtub or shloka. Those standard short verses like Dharmakshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yuyutsavaha Mamaka Pandavaschaiva Kimakurvata Sanjaya. Short, four quarters, two lines, 32 syllables. We'll get into the details in a second. But it's a short that we are all familiar with. But occasionally, the Gita breaks into a longer meter. When does it do that? Anyone remember? Yes. So when... Okay.
In the 11th chapter, right after Krishna shows his form, Arjuna breaks into verse to describe his prayers.
Exactly. Both Sanjay and Arjun break into the longer meters, Deva, Deva, Jagatpate, to express a sense of amazement and power that comes from that vision of Krishna's universal form. There's another place that he breaks into, the Gita breaks into longer verses. Before the 11th chapter. Go ahead again.
In the second chapter?
Yes, when what happens?
Karpanya dosho pahatasva bhavaha. And then there's three verses after that that are long.
So what's happening at that point? What's Karpanya dosho pahata, that verse?
So he's describing how he's feeling
yes.
about fighting this war. And so I think when he's expressing that feeling, he's using these, you know, words to describe that.
Yes, he's expressing his feelings, but he's expressing his feelings even before that verse. What changes in 2.7 is that he finally decides to surrender to Krishna, right? He finds a solution to it. And so in that mode of surrender, he uses a longer meter. Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava prichami tvam dharma samudhacheta yachreyasya nishchitam bruhitanme shishyaste ham shadimam tvam prapannam. In essence, when one cannot contain oneself and has to, you find a verse that fits the mood and you break into that, right? And so Bhagavatam, especially 10th canto, does this all the time. It'll be going on story, 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 plot, 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 and then all of a sudden something important will happen, or some devotee will express some heartfelt prayers to the Lord, and they'll break into a longer meter. In 10th canto, it becomes exceptional, because the meters they break into are not just... Gita has two basic meters, the long one and the short one. It's called Anushtub and Trishtub, short and long, okay? And... again, I'll show you a sheet with these names in just a minute so you can copy them down. But the short, long, 2 meters. But Bhagavatam has a much larger repertoire of different verse metrical patterns that can be used. And so when something as powerful and as beautiful and as intimate and moving as the gopis' prayers of separation to Krishna take place, you can't just use the little one or the long one. You have to use something extraordinarily beautiful, right? So those verses, Tava kathamritam tapta jivanam kavibhiriditam kalmashapaham shravanamangalam shrimadatatam Bhuvigrinantite bhuridajana. So nice, huh? So beautiful. This meter is called Rajahamsi, which means the king of swans. Rajahamsi, the king of swans. And it's the movement of a swan. Have you seen a swan swim? Right? The swan goes like this, left and then right. And this is the mood of the meter. Tava kathamritam tapta jivanam. So you can hear it, right? You can hear the movement of the swan going left and right in little short bursts like that. Very, very like a swan. It's a very aristocratic meter. It's a very beautiful one and a very dignified meter as well, as you would expect from a swan. So Bhagavatam uses many such meters. Shikshashtaka, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eight verses, Mahaprabhu uses several different meters to express different feelings and different moods present within those verses. And we'll look at some of those in a moment, okay? So metrical verses, meters, are a powerful tool to help express the poet's feeling and the emotions that are behind them. And the question really is how to recognize what meter we are looking at. How are meters made and how do we recognize them? Essentially, there are about 10 or so commonly used meters in Sanskrit. Okay, there are literally hundreds of metrical patterns, but 10 that are used commonly and regularly. And of those, 5 that are very common. So at the minimum, if we learn how to recognize those 5 meters, and we learn one melody to use for each one of those, we're set. Right? You can recite pretty much any of the verses in Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. It's not going to be a problem. Most of us already know the meters, the melodies to go with many of these meters. So like Vasanta Tilaka, you can just use Brahma Samhita meter. Any Vasanta Tilaka verse you find in Bhagavatam, you just sing it like Brahma Samhita, Chinta Mani Prakarasat, like that. Any Shardula Vikriditam you find, sing it like Shad Goswami Ashtaka, Krishna Kirtanagan. Any Mandakranta you find, sing it like Naham Vipro Nachanarapati Napi. Any Trishtub you find, sing it like Karpanya Dosho Pata Swabhava, right? So if you've got one melody per metrical type, basically you're covered. Then if you want to learn additional melodies and other stylish ways of doing it, you're welcome to. But you've got the basic minimum covered and you know how to recite these verses. Okay? The challenge is how to recognize which meter you're looking at. Okay? The short ones are pretty straightforward, but the longer ones can be difficult to recognize. And so here's how we can do that. So meter in Sanskrit is defined as a series of long and short syllables. Long syllables are called guru, and short syllables are called laghu. Okay? Guru means long or heavy. It's actually the words literally translate to heavy and light. Laghu means light. So long and short or heavy and light. Guru, laghu. And every verse is a fixed number of syllables in a fixed pattern of long and short. First of all, what is a syllable? A syllable is basically made by a vowel. It's a vowel with some consonants. You have exactly the number of syllables as you have a number of vowels. So the word Krishna has how many vowels? 2. R, kr, and a. Krishna, 2 syllables. Rama, 2 vowels. A and a. Ra, ma, 2 syllables. Govinda, 3. Govinda. Okay? O, E, A are the 3 vowels. Chaitanya, and so on. Okay? So, how do you know whether a syllable is guru or laghu? Because each verse, remember, is a pattern of guru and laghu syllables. So how do you know whether it's guru or laghu? Here is the criteria. A syllable is guru only if it has a long vowel. Okay? If it's a long vowel, what are the long vowels? A, E, U, R, E, I, O, O. All are long. There's actually fewer short ones. The short ones are just A, I, U, RI, and U. Okay, those five. But the rest are long. So if any syllable has a long vowel, it's automatically guru. Or if its vowel is followed by a double consonant. So even though the vowel may be short, if it's followed by a double consonant, it becomes guru. Essentially, something is long, or guru, it's heavy, if you need twice as much time to say it. If it's a long vowel, you need twice as much time to say ah, then you do okay? If it's a double consonant, you're going to need twice as much time to say it. Okay. If any of these two, either one of these two applies, it's a guru. Otherwise, it's a laghu. If these two don't apply, it's a short vowel. Okay, now, let's try this. Okay, so I'm going to try this with the first line of Brahma Samhita Chintamani verse, okay? And we're going to scan that verse. Scanning means we're going to identify whether it's guru or laghu, okay? Okay, so, okay, here we go. The first syllable is chint or chi, right? It's the vowel that counts. So chi, that syllable, is it guru or laghu? So the vowel, is it short or long?
Short.
Short, I, right? So one would think it's laghu, but what was the second criteria? If the vowel is followed by a double consonant, two consonants, it makes it guru. Are there two consonants afterwards? Yes. Na and ta. N and T. You see? So therefore, this is guru. And for guru, I'm going to make a long line like that to signify that that syllable is guru. Okay? Chint. Because even though the vowel is short, it's followed by a double consonant, N and T. Na and ta, therefore it's guru. Next one is ta. Next vowel, chin ta. That's guru or laghu?
Guru,
because the vowel is long. Ma is the next syllable, guru or laghu? Laghu, because the a is short, and do you have a double consonant? No. So chin ta, ma. Ni, guru or laghu? Guru. Okay. Let's have a war. Guru, laghu, guru. Ni is the vowel short?
Yes.
Okay, so that doesn't satisfy that criteria. But is it followed by a double consonant?
Yes.
Pa and ra. Right? Two consonants. Pra. So this is guru. Okay? Chintamani. This is chintamani. So this is guru. Then pra is laghu or guru?
Laghu.
Because it's a is a short vowel. Is it followed by a double consonant?
No.
Laghu. Ka is laghu or guru?
Laghu.
It's a short vowel, but it's followed only by a single consonant, R. Ra is guru or laghu?
Laghu.
Because it's short, followed by only a single consonant, S. Sad is guru or laghu? Guru, because it's a short vowel, but double consonants, D and M. Next one, Ma, Laghu. Short A, single vowel, single consonant. Su, check here also. Laghu, short vowel. U is a short vowel, followed a single consonant. This one, Ka, Guru. Short vowel, but it's followed by double consonant, L and P. Pa is? Okay, this is the real test of your Sanskrit knowledge. Okay. How many people think it's Guru? How many people think it's Laghu? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the Laghus win, okay? Here's why. This is a short vowel. Is there a double consonant? No. R can be both a vowel and a consonant. R with a dot underneath it is a vowel. So this is only one consonant, a V. Okay? Now this is all going to be important. You'll see. It looks like it's all tedious work, but it's important. Okay, this one, vr. Vr is a guru or laghu? Guru. Short ri, but it's followed by double consonant, K and sha, vruksha. So this is guru, and then the last one doesn't really matter because it's the last one, okay? So seriously, that's how they mark the last one, is they do doubles. Oh, perfect, thank you. Yes, go ahead.
So if the word Chintamani were to be analyzed separately, wouldn't it be a laghu instead of a guru, correct?
At the end?
Yeah, at the end.
Yes.
So when we analyze conjunctively, we don't analyze separately.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
You always have to see the next word so long as you're not crossing to the next line.
Okay.
But you don't cross to the next line.
So is Chintamani Prakara one word or is it a sentence or
actually Chintamani prakara sadmasu. That whole thing is one word. Yeah. Chintamani prakara.
Break it for sake of pronunciation.
Yes. Okay. Yes, exactly. So the whole thing is one word, but you just keep going. And if it's the last syllable, even in Chintamani, it doesn't matter. Long or short, no one really cares because it's the final one. In fact, by default, it's kind of long because you have plenty of time to pause. Guru and Laghu are basically indications of how much time you need to say that syllable. So that's what creates the rhythm. Chintamani prakara sadmasu kalpa vriksha. So notice with the rhythm, that's what's giving the rhythm, right? Each longer one, chintamani. And with ni, I stopped because nipr, to say the PR, you need more time on the ni. So in that way, it creates a particular pattern. Now this pattern that you see, long, long, short, long, short, 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 long, short, short. This pattern all the way to the end is the pattern that creates Vasanta Tilaka. Okay? So now if we move to the handout that shows all the metrical patterns. Let's see, next. Yes, this one here. And yeah, keep going down. That's good. So this is a list of the major meters in the Sanskrit language. Can we go up just a little bit, please? Yeah, so we get the page. Okay, so here you have the key metrical patterns. I know it's a little bit small. We'll expand it in just a second. But just to give you an overview, there's about, 10 or so on this list of the main metrical patterns, and you can see each one has a meter that's defined by a series of long, 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 short, short syllables like that. Now, if we can please expand the Vasanta Tilaka one, I'll show you which one it is. Whoops. This one here, if you can make that bigger. Yeah, this even a little bigger. Okay, so Vasanta Tilaka right here, Okay? Now, see this pattern of guru, guru, laghu, guru, laghu? Does it match what we have on the board? Did we do a good job? Yeah. You see? Guru, guru, laghu, guru, laghu, 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 guru, laghu, laghu, guru, laghu, guru, and then anything. Guru. Yeah? Matches exactly. If we did this with the next three lines of that verse, Chintamani prakarasadmasukalpa viksha lakshavriteshu surabhir abhipalayantam.